Morning, everyone. Everyone awake and ready? Awake and ready, good. Everyone awake and ready?
Yeah.
Let's pray together. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Dearest Mother.
Dearest
Saints and sages of all religions. I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Not seen or heard, this is what we were listening to in the piano music, was piano renditions of Mother Hamilton's chants and played by our own Janice Stevenson. Janice has played the Christmas carols here for the last several years, did a beautiful job of it, and so these CDs are in the back, the dining room table, if you would like one. And we also have to go with it, the words and lyrics by Mother for each one of the songs. And so it's a nice way to learn the songs. This is also, you can stream it on the website, and the words and the pictures are also on the website. So January 31st, we mark the anniversary of Mother's Mahasamadhi, which is a yogi's conscious exit from the body. And we put together a little pamphlet. I think there are copies of this pamphlet in the back as well. There's a wonderful description. Dr. Lewis was a disciple of Yogananda's as well as his wife and family. The daughter wrote a very charming description one time of growing up, because they lived in Boston, and for the first year, 5 years that Yogananda was here in America, he lived in Boston. And he oftentimes came over to the Lewises, and he would cook dinner with Mrs. Lewis, and he was just somewhat part of the family fixture. And the daughter described this, and she said she grew up thinking that everyone had a Swami, every family had a Swami. But this is Mrs. Lewis describing the last day of Dr. Lewis's life and her experience of it. And he had been experiencing some illness, so he went into the hospital. His first 3 days in the hospital were hard on him because of the tests. On Monday, however, he seemed greatly improved. That day, we had such a pleasant time together. After his supper, which he enjoyed, he sat in a chair for 13 minutes and then returned to bed. At 7 p.m., he said he would like to take a nap. He slept very peacefully until 7:30. When he awakened and remarked, "I want to sit up straight," I arranged the pillows at his back as he assumed the lotus pose for his usual evening meditation. His hands were upturned, his eyes closed. I sat beside him, thinking that I too would meditate. I was aroused in 2 or 3 minutes by a tremendous sound. It resembled the suction sound of a huge pump or the breath sound of a giant kriya. With the sound came a great flash of spiritual white light whose brilliance might be compared to that given forth by a million electric light bulbs. Doctor's blue eyes opened. Piercing flashes of blue light came from them, and then they were locked at the Christ center in the forehead. His head lowered somewhat, but his body remained erect. For an instant, the face of Swami Sri Yukteswarji appeared, enveloped Doctor's face, then it was all over. How many times have I thanked God, the Great Ones, and Beloved Master, that I was privileged to witness such a glorious passing. Mother was reading from that in a talk, and then she continues with her talk. This is the yogi's voluntary leaving off of the body in full control, not being forced out of having the breath choked out of the body, but of being in full control, of going into the state where you are breathless, and yet you have full consciousness. Breathlessness, Master said, is deathlessness. And this is absolutely so. So we should practice this Hung Sa technique and gain this control over breath, over our mind, over our heart, and all of our functions. Many times we come a great way. We go through many experiences. But you see, the last stronghold is the causal body. We go through the physical, we escape from the physical, even though we are still living in it. We escape from the astral or the psychic body. But this causal body that says, I am spiritual. I have had these wonderful experiences. I have come so far. This is still the little I, and that little I must be destroyed in order that you may attain the consciousness of the Christ, so that you see the consciousness, that consciousness, in every atom of space, where you see the light of God everywhere. This must be. This is the most difficult time of all because this is a subtle thing. It is the ego of the mind, and it crops up, and it tempts you, and it battles with you, and it takes you this way and that way, and you fly in all directions. And you wish to God you could settle down someplace and find out which way you should go. But the more you ask, the more you try, the less you seem to know. And finally, you just give up and say, well, God, I'm helpless. You've got to lead me. And that's the moment that God is waiting for. That's when He can truly step in. When you know that you are helpless, when you can do nothing, when you can think nothing, say nothing, then God can come in and take care of your life, take charge of it for you. And He does everything for your highest good because He knows what is best for us. And reading from Master's Commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. This is chapter 7, verse 19. After many incarnations, the sage attains me, realizing the Lord is all-pervading. A man so illumined is hard to find. Master's Commentary, a rare devotee is he who discerns only the omnipresent beam of spirit that creates the many dreams of births and deaths, including his own. Such a man, concentrating on the one cosmic beam alone, becomes liberated from the witnessing of many dreams of births and deaths, forced upon mortals who are infested with lusts and pursued by karma. He can quicken his evolution by living many lives materialized in daily visions. A person who emotionally identifies himself with the daily dream, the motion picture of his life, does not find liberation because he becomes entangled with the web of births and deaths. He does not realize that in an average lifespan of 60 years, a man is born or reawakened 21,900 times and dies or enters the sleep or the little death state 21,900 times. Certain yoga treatises explain that every exhalation, a person dies, and with every inhalation is reborn, On the average, man breathes 18 times a minute. Some yogis say that with every lub sound of the heart, there is a birth, and every dub sound of the heart, there is a death. According to that theory, a man lives and dies perhaps 70 times a minute. According to the normal heart per minute of his rate. In a lifetime, a person would have many more experiences of heartbeat births and deaths than those involved in inhalations and exhalations. Medical science claims that a normal man's brain is substantially changed every 8 years. According to that theory, a man is reborn 8 times in a lifetime of 64 years. Some sages say that evil men who die without the desire for liberation may experience bodily births and deaths during millions of light-year cycles. However, Lahirmahasya, Sri Yukteswar, and their advanced disciples have testified from their own realization that people with past good karma can quicken their evolution by Kriya Yoga practice and find liberation in 3 or 6 or 12 or 24 or 48 years in one lifetime, a liberation that ordinarily comes to a righteous person without conscious effort only in a million years of births and deaths by natural evolution. A righteous person in this sense is one who lives in harmony with his soul and offends not the laws of nature. By bullock cart and boat and by a circuitous way, it can take many years for a man to go around the earth. But by the fastest airplane and the shortest route, a person may traverse the earth in a few days and possibly in a few hours. The time will come when the distance will be converted into a matter of minutes. Perhaps Master was looking forward to the time of the astronauts who can do it. Similarly, the individual who makes no conscious effort may take countless lives to become liberated. But a wise man, through his knowledge of quickening evolution by Kriya Yoga, may find emancipation in one life. A wisdom expert, an accomplished Kriya Yogi, may banish the karma of his past undiminished actions by living many births and deaths enacted in daily visions during samadhi. In this way, within 3 years, he may work out all of his past desires of many lifetimes by materializing them in visions through the power of samadhi. A sage understands that a human incarnation is a motion picture of many dreams. Such an illumined devotee does not have to go through the many mortal births and deaths. On the superconscious level, he can condense the requisite karmic experiences of many lives into the dreams of the present. This capacity of what is called samadhi is inherent inside all of us. Very few actually enter into this state and take full advantage of human potential. It is like the individual who goes about their life, and out of many hundreds, perhaps, there's one who seeks higher education. And that one may go on and get a degree. And out of those, one here and there will go on to seek out more advanced degrees. Until you get to the highest degrees, and there are very few in the world. Even so, there are those who are students of spirituality, of religion, and what religion truly has to offer, which is this ability to enter into these highest states of consciousness. Religion is really worthless if it does not speak to this higher consciousness and our ability to enter into it. It is of little use to us in this lifetime to think about an afterlife in heaven if our entire time here on earth is spent in hell. What we need, and what we are in desperate need of, is the liberating aspect that comes to us by being able to enter into this higher state of consciousness. So this is something that has come to us. It is natural to us. And yet we find that it is a very little explored country. It is something that is actually looked on by many people as anything at all. They can hear the words, perhaps, but they don't understand it. They don't comprehend the vast potential that exists within each human soul. Right within your own heart, there exists the Atman, the soul, that pure essence of divine spirit. And when you meditate and you put your mind upon the heart center, and you feel that heart center begin to open and to expand, you feel and see there a light that begins to glow and emanate from you. At first, it goes out through your body and your own consciousness, and you feel the uplifting, transformative aspect of this. But as you attune yourself to that heart center and that pure light of divinity that is there, it begins to expand out even more, and it embraces all those who are around you, not because they have done anything kind for you, not because of some gift they have given to you and now you feel kindly towards them. That's the way of the world. But when you attune yourself to this divine love that exists right within you, that light, it goes out and it embraces everyone, irrespective of their relationship with you. As Jesus so aptly pointed out, it is easy to love those who love you. What is difficult is to love those who hate you, who persecute you, who work against you. That's the tough lesson. And from a human standpoint, we might even say it's an impossible one. Because if somebody seems to have us in the crosshairs of a target and they're coming after us, it's difficult to love them in that moment. But when we feel that divine union with God, it's as if our whole consciousness is changed. We are lifted up and we see things differently now. We see that perhaps people are operating out of ignorance. And through their ignorance and their own pain, they seek to strike out in order to alleviate the pain that they feel inside. Now, this does not make it right. But you begin to understand what motivates another individual. One thing you can ask yourself if somebody is behaving towards you in an unlovely way is, would a happy person be behaving in the way that this person is? Would they be speaking? Would they be acting? Would they be calculating if they were really happy, if they were at peace? I was talking to an individual one time who had a very difficult boss and made her life a living hell. And I said, well, one small consolation perhaps is that you have to live with him 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. He has to live with himself 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. How would you like that sentence? When you look inside of another person who is misbehaving, you'll find there a person who is extremely unhappy. And yes, what they may be doing may be going against you and may be making your life more difficult. But you have inner resources. You can switch the mind from the outer circumstances to your inner circumstances. You can focus upon your heart center. And when you do so, you can make that connection with the divine within you. This is so importantly critical in your life. That ability to shift your attention, to shift your attention from the things of the world to the things of divine spirit. This power is tremendous, and it is much unappreciated. We don't really go to school on how we place our attention on different things. Master here mentioned mastering the causal world. The causal world is the idea world. An idea, of course, is very subtle. It's very fast. It can take you off in light speed in every which direction. Just in a nanosecond, you're gone, off into some other place, through that thought. It is very difficult to cultivate that presence, to be just present to where you're at in the moment, and not have your mind taking you off into the future, back into the past, into a daydream, all over the place it goes. But what the yogis discovered was that the breath is key to this connection between spirit and body. And so by just focusing upon your breath, that when you breathe, you are connecting spirit and body, spirit and earth. And each breath in is like a birth, an incarnation. And as you exhale out, that is like a mini death. When somebody dies, they take that last exhalation, and out goes the spirit with it. And so with every breath that you take, you are having a very miniature kind of lifetime. And if you're very mindful about that, you'll learn to appreciate and have great gratitude for every breath that you take in. And when you breathe out, you let go of all of the things of the world. You die into spirit. You let go of your attachments. You let go of the things that bother you. You let go of everything and you release yourself into spirit. So with the incoming breath comes life, comes incarnation, comes energy, comes intelligence. When you breathe out, it all goes back into spirit. It's a tremendous thing, really, these great sages in India, because they recognize that creation comes from spirit, and it evolves out from spirit. And then we go on as souls to this great evolutionary journey. We move out into this world. We learn to explore this world and all the things of this world. We find it fascinating as a soul. What it is to be in a body. What it is to explore this world. What it is to find that we have some empowerment, that we're able to do things, that we're able to create things, that we're able to sustain them and then to destroy them. And all of it is fascinating to the mind, and the mind gets drawn out and out and out into the world. But eventually we begin to start missing our true home. We begin to miss the spirit that we once felt so accustomed to and felt like it was absolutely ours. And we can't just turn our attention in most circumstances and just put it right on spirit and then we have it again. We have what is called karma. Those things that we have done, they go out. And it's like being in a canyon where you call out a name. And within a very short amount of time, that name echoes right back to you. And this is your karma. The things that you project, the things that you say, the things that you do, they go out and they reverberate back to you. Now, we like it all right when the good things come back to us. But we're not so thrilled about it when the things that we've done that aren't so good come back to us. We'd rather that not happen. And, of course, in the clever way of the ego, we end up blaming God for what we're receiving then. Why are you treating me so badly here? Why is nothing working out for me? And we ignore the fact that we have set all of this into motion from the very beginning. And through this, we learn wisdom. We learn wisdom because we can beat our heads against that wall just as much as we want to, but our head is going to give way before that wall is. And so we learn wisdom. We learn to guide and conduct our lives in ways that when that echo comes back to you, that it sounds sweet. There is a saying one time that was quite cute that said, make sure that whatever words that you speak are sweet so that when you have to eat your words, you know, they taste all right when they're going back down. You don't want bitter, sour words that you have to eat when it comes time. So feel that and notice that power of creation, of thought. This is hugely important. I remember a time in my own journey when it really became so crystal clear to me that the power of my thoughts created my reality. It really did. And I was accountable every second for every thought that I created. Now, this is really quite a thought. This is really quite a concept. Because most of us, and we have a right to the privacy of our own thoughts, but most of us would just like to go on and create in the way that we do. It's our old habits and our desires and all the different ways that we like to just daydream and we like to have what we like to have. And we think, quite reasonably perhaps, that we're not harming anyone through having these daydreams, by having these thoughts. And so we go on leaving them ungoverned. But then you come to that point and you realize that every one of those thoughts has creative power to it. And that the more emotional power you put into those thoughts, and the more persistent you are in thinking those thoughts, the greater the power it has. And you are constantly creating your reality. You, many of us, know people. Of course, I know there's none of them that are in this room that speak negatively. You ask them about something, and it's whatever's wrong with their life. It's just a constant outpouring. It's this is wrong, and that is wrong, and this didn't measure up to my expectations, and this person let me down. And it's just constant. And when you look at the power of thought, you think, my God, what is that person doing to themselves? And sure enough, if you can look with your inner sight, you would see that they have a heavy, dark cloud hanging around them. Why? Because they are creating it. And then they look around themselves and they wonder why the world treats them so poorly. And the reason is because they've thought themselves into that condition. And then they begin to listen to the echo. And the echo only confirms what they thought in the very beginning. And then people begin to treat them in the way that they expect to be treated. And even if they don't, they'll ignore the good things and they'll reach out for whatever is negative. So in our own thoughts, we have to begin to really understand the power of thought. That thoughts take us in directions. If you think about your thoughts as being the navigational tool within your human system, and that wherever your thoughts are pointed, you follow. You follow. Wherever your head is, the rest of your body will follow. And then you really begin to think, all right, I've got to manage this. I've got to begin to get a handle on this. And one of the greatest ways that we can is to just begin to remember God. Now, that can seem to be a dry thing if we don't put some leavening of emotion into it. And so we want to think of God with devotion. We want to connect with God in a way that makes sense to us. Now, God created everything and every relationship. And God can be any relationship whatsoever. In India, they think of the baby Krishna. And when they see a baby, and oftentimes you'll see in India, they'll decorate, they'll put on makeup and things on this small baby, earrings and everything, in emulation of the pictures of Krishna. And their heart goes out to that baby. They love that baby. But they don't just love the baby. They're seeing the divine life that is within that baby. And so that is a powerful relationship then. Others see God as a friend. I knew a farmer one time, and he referred to God as the boss. He'd say, well, the boss, you know, is telling me to do this, and I'll have to refer that one back to the boss. And everything was about the boss, and you're wondering who in the world is the boss, because this man owned his own farm. But he had that kind of relationship with God, and he would talk about it in that way. Others is as a friend. As a dear chum, Arjuna had that kind of relationship with Krishna. And when, at one point, Krishna revealed his universal form and that he was the tremendous aspect of the all-powerful, omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent God, Arjuna shrank back in some horror, and he says, well, if I've been over familiar with you, I've called you my friend, I've called you by pet names, and I've not recognized who you really are. So please forgive me if I've overstepped any bounds. But he had that sense that God was his friend and treated him as his friend. I once had a vision of a CEO in a company. And the CEO largely remained behind this very large desk, and it was a big company. So there's many people that worked for the company that they knew about the boss. Maybe they saw a picture of him now and then, but they've never met him. And so they mostly were connecting with their immediate supervisor and the people that they worked with. They didn't think that much about the boss because they didn't have that kind of connection with him. And as you go up through the ranks of management, you grow closer to those who actually know the boss. And so they begin to think, well, if I need something, I'll go to the boss. And maybe I can bolster up my idea of what I need by a little swapping. If I do this, then maybe the boss will see his way to helping me out with this problem and providing what I need. And some people have that kind of relationship with God. And then there were those who are more on the inner circle. And they would easily come into the office, but there was this large desk, and they were rather formal with the boss, and they referred him by respectful names and so on. And they would come in with petitions and work orders and all the rest of it and get their directions. And that was the kind of relationship that they had. And then within this vision that I had, this small grandchild burst in through the door. There was no ceremony. There was nothing. The grandchild ran and threw themselves into the arms of the grandfather, who was the CEO. They went right around the desk, and they jumped right into his lap. And he loved it, and they loved him. And we can have that kind of relationship with God. We don't need formal prayers. We don't need these kinds of petitions and requests all the time. Why would we not just seek out God's presence just for the sake of his presence? Because in that presence is all love, all joy, all peace, a deep connection to ourselves and to omnipresent spirit. Why in the world would we think that the gifts are greater than the quality of the giver? But that's the way that we think, you see. We were very small-minded in our conception of the divine. So we can feel that familiarity. We can burst in through the door. We can throw ourselves upon his lap. We don't need all that formality. In fact, that formality, like that large desk, can stand in the way of our direct connection. And so you open your heart. You put your mind upon your heart. You govern your thoughts. You direct your thoughts. And when you get a loving relationship with God, it's not hard to think of God. You think of a time when you've fallen in love with someone or you really want a certain object. You don't have to discipline yourself to think about that person or to think about that car that you're thinking about buying or anything else. It just keeps coming to your mind automatically. That's not hard work. That's easy. It's enjoyable. And if you make that kind of relationship with the divine, you don't have to discipline yourself. You just simply become enamored with the divine that is within you and all about you. That is the great intelligence that has created everything that is. And when you do that, then you merge yourself. See, that is the ultimate state in love, isn't it? Is union, is to merge yourself into the being of the beloved. And you merge yourself into God's being. You become so intermingled with the divine being that there is no longer any sense of I and thou. There is only one. There is only one. And so this is the great consummation of our divine love affair. This is what Master came to teach. This is what Mother taught. It is what all the great saints, all the great masters have all taught. There are techniques. There are methods that can help us to quicken that goal. But nothing is quicker, faster than love. Because love immediately embraces the beloved. And now there is no distance. There is only oneness. So I invite you, if you have not done so already, to develop that kind of relationship and that kind of love affair with God. And if you have, to deepen it. Because, you know, it is the human mind's tendency to restrict and to confine and to contain whatever it is that you're thinking about. That's the human tendency. But the spiritual tendency is to expand, is to open, is to merge and to become one with. And so never find yourself limiting yourself, because God is infinite and there is no end to that experience of that wonderful love affair. Wonderful love affair. And that is yours to be had. And it is the most tremendous love story this world has ever known and ever will know. Please pray with me. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Peace, bliss, amen.